been on superhumanradio.com lately. Lots of free supplements, great information, and older episodes of Superhuman Radio are all available. Go to superhumanradio.com today.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply. It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have a great show planned for you today during the first hour. Excuse me. We'll be talking with Dr. Kristen Beavers about thigh fat and how it may actually be the reason that the elderly slow down. And then during the second hour, we'll be talking to Drs. Sachin Shah and Dr. Ian Riddick about energy drinks and the potential risks that they elevate, such as in blood pressure and heart rhythm areas. Before we get started, I have an announcement to make real quick. We announced this yesterday when we had Dr. Michael Smith on from Life Extension Foundation. Right now, you can go to superhumanradio.com, click the banner ad, and get $25 in free product and a free year's membership to Life Extension Foundation. No catches. Just join, and you'll be able to use that $25 in anything that Life Extension sells, supplements, products, whatever. And, of course, you'll get a 12-month membership to the single best organization that is fighting for your right to healthy supplements every single day. And a monthly subscription to Life Extension Magazine. So check it out. Go to superhumanradio.com today and join. Okay. As we age, we slow down. We know this. We also lose our ability to become ambulatory. We've talked about this numerous times on the show. It's especially a threat for women. Men tend to be a little stronger. Women outlive men, but women end up in institutions because the kids go, "Hey, Mom, you fell a couple times. And you can't take care of yourself." What happens to us? Is it surely the loss of muscle or something else going on? Dr. Kristen Beavers, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, so first of all, what made you look at this? Was it the reason that I decided that as we age, we lose the ability to be ambulatory?
Yeah, well, we know, I mean, there's a big public health push to try to figure out, you know, as our baby boomers continue to age, how to keep them living independently longer. And so actually this area of research or this study that I'll be talking about today was kind of born from several investigators in our group kind of looking at how slowed gait speed and declines in physical performance predict things like mobility loss and nursing home admission and death and things of that nature.
Yeah, I'm with you on this because this is a really important subject as far as I'm concerned. So Okay, so you looked at a fairly large population of men and women between the ages of 70 to 79, right?
That's correct. We utilize data from the Health, Aging, and Body Composition Study. And it's a cohort study that, as you said, follows roughly 3,075 adults as they age from 70 plus.
Okay. And it's been thought for a long time that the slowing down, the changes in gait, and even the changes in balance are a result of a loss of muscle.
Mm-hmm.
What did you find out?
Well, what you're saying is absolutely true. We know that kind of starting around the fourth decade of life, people start to gradually lose muscle mass. And, you know, it makes probably intuitive sense that you need to have a certain amount of muscle mass to function physically. And that, you know, ability to function physically is what's going to really determine whether or not you can live by yourself or not as you get older. But there's, another body compartment that I think is very important, which is fat mass, which we know from several other similar studies like this has been, you know, playing a bigger role in implicating folks for functional decline. So we were specifically looking at both body compartments and how changes in fat and lean mass may influence gait speed decline in otherwise healthy older adults.
But when I first looked at the heading of this study, I immediately thought what you were looking at was subcutaneous fat and its mechanical challenges to the legs, but that's not what you looked at. You looked at intramuscular fat, correct?
Well, yes. So we actually looked at several markers of body composition. We kind of had this increasingly sophisticated approach because we wanted to see, you know, so I guess the bigger question was, you know, do change in different body compartments, i.e. fat and lean mass, predict gait speed decline? And do we get more information from CT measurements, or can we, is BMI just fine? Because we kind of get, you know, wrapped up in, you know, we can do these sophisticated measurements, but if the information we're getting from them isn't that much greater,
yeah,
then you know, we might as well use something simpler.
Because BMI, because BMI is flawed, because they would take a man like myself, who is considered near obese at like 32 BMI, but I'm only about 14% body fat. Mm-hmm. And I'm mainly muscle, so clearly the BMI is not going to assess me the same way it would a person who's 50% body fat.
Oh, sure. And we started with BMI. We suspected that, as you, for the reasons you mentioned, it would be limited. We also looked at DEXA acquired total body fat mass and lean mass, and then we had CT measurements, which allowed us to look at intermuscular fat, so fat in the muscle or in and around the muscle itself, thigh muscle area, and then we also we had the measurements of abdominal subcutaneous and visceral fat, so we looked at those measurements too. So I guess the point here is that we looked at several domains of body composition and tried to see if you got more information from the more sophisticated ones.
And what did you find?
So we found that essentially when we looked at how change in body composition predicted gait speed decline or change in gait speed over what ended up being a four-year period, that really the change in, of all the measurements I just said, it was really change in thigh intermuscular fat, and by change I mean increases. So increasing amounts of fat deposited in the thigh muscle itself was largely responsible for who slowed down. It explained a lot of that variability. Additionally, how loss of muscle, so the loss of thigh muscle itself also predicted gait speed decline. But they weren't, definitely seemed to work together, and I don't know that you could say that one was more important than the other.
Was there a direct relationship between the loss of muscle in the individuals that you followed in thigh muscle and the replacement of that loss with fat, or did the two have no correlation?
Yeah, it seemed you raised a really good point. So it did seem like for those folks that were losing muscle mass, that the thigh was being infiltrated with fat mass, and so yes, that is true. Additionally, when we kind of looked at this modeling, the folks that were losing the most muscle and gaining the most fat, when we kind of looked at that subgroup, these folks were actually at risk for clinically meaningful declines in gait speed over a 4-year period.
Now the infiltration of fat into muscle has been well known to be a problem in general, but in this particular study and the outcomes, that the endpoints you were looking for, was there a greater decline in leg strength, balance, mobility, any of those types of things in the individuals who had an in concert exchange from muscle mass versus fat infiltration versus somebody who just lost purely muscle but had no fat infiltration? In other words, did the fat present its own challenges in the working structure of the muscle?
Yes, I think that is safe to say. So so the only outcome that we were interested in was mobility. I think
right.
The balance question that you're bringing is great, and that's a topic for another paper. But when we were looking at walking speed here, as I mentioned, the folks that we kind of partitioned people into 9 different groups. Those who looking at kind of tertiles of thigh intermuscular fat change and then thigh muscle area change. And
right.
And anyway, the folks that lost the most thigh muscle area and gained the most fat, so that one group saw by far the largest declines in gait speed, compared maybe to say those who just gained the most muscle or lost the most muscle,
yeah,
or gained the most fat. Yeah,
that would be to me it would be intuitive, because I have to believe that intramuscular fat deposits pose a challenge to the muscle in that, you know, when you, everything comes back to analogies about automobiles with me, by the way. But anyway, you know, if you, take an engine that produces 300 horsepower and you try to run it without oil, the additional friction, you'll find out that the engine is barely producing 100 horsepower until it finally burns out. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that the internal workings of the engine are being restrictive and gobbling up a lot of the power that the engine is producing that would normally come out of the engine to the drivetrain. So it would seem to me that the muscle is not only having to allow the person to be ambulatory, stand, whatever it is that they're doing, but the muscle also has to produce force to overcome this this infiltration of non-working tissue that's just kind of going along for the ride.
Sure. I mean, and I think, yeah, I think absolutely there could be some contractile problem there, but I mean, also we know fat tissue will secrete several inflammatory biomarkers, and I mean, I can only speculate as to what the mechanism would be, but yes, I think that you're absolutely right that there is some interplay here between loss of fat or loss of muscle mass being replaced with fat mass that really seems to be detrimental for the older adult.
All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I have lots more questions. We're talking with Dr. Kristen Beavers about intramuscular fat in the thigh and how it creates a situation that causes older adults to slow down. She is with the Department of Health and Exercise Sciences at Wake Forest University. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money. Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a one-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting-edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding. True Protein is now TrueNutrition.com. The company that gave you personalized protein blends has now expanded their offerings to include over 5,000 new products. Whether your interests are health and fitness, sports nutrition and supplements, or fitness gear and accessories, you'll find what you're looking for at TrueNutrition.com. Check out the new vegetarian and vegan product lines as well. Oh, and don't worry, you can still blend your own personal protein supplements with a full range of milk, whey, casein, beef, egg, rice, and soy proteins. Check out TrueNutrition.com. Nutrition.com today.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RGCell banner ad today. Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating. But you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Kristen Beavers. Okay, were there any gender differences? Did you see this phenomenon of transition away from muscle mass and to greater fat infiltration was higher in women than in men?
We didn't see any gender differences when we looked at change in the body compartments over time. When we kind of looked at just baseline, yes, there were gender differences, and so we stratified those analyses. In the kind of baseline models, we just looked at, so what is someone's fat mass or muscle mass at baseline? How might that predict declines in walking speed? It seemed like for women, if you were heavier, period, that was associated with gait speed decline. So it didn't matter if it was more muscle or more fat, just heavier women seemed to see the greatest declines in gait speed. For men, it was really only the adiposity measures that were driving that.
Yeah. I'm assuming that these individuals kept diaries over the 4 years?
If that variable is there, I don't know.
Well, I guess what I was shooting for was there any reporting that any of these individuals engaged in physical activity, exercise as a regular, regimen?
Oh, well, we did try to capture physical activity as best we could. This is a large cohort study, so sometimes some of these variables get diluted a little bit. But they were queried on an annual basis as to how much they walked. Now, it's not all exercise, but for the average 70-year-old, probably walking is the majority of the physical activity that they do. So we did put that variable into our models. So when we adjusted our estimates, we included how much walking someone would have done.
So were you able to see that those who did walk more frequently, this phenomenon of loss of muscle mass and infiltration of fat mass was lower in those?
Well, I do believe that walking was significant to our models, but when we adjusted for that, this relationship still existed. So even accounting for how much someone walked, we still saw that thigh intermuscular fat thigh intermuscular fat and loss of thigh muscle were associated with gait speed decline.
Now, all you looked at was gait speed decline, correct? Or did you look at any other variables of standing and moving?
No, as I said, that would be great. That would be a good future direction for sure.
Okay. And so what was the takeaway? So ultimately, what did you hope that both clinicians and individuals would take away from your research?
So I think that there were probably two takeaway messages from this study. Number one, what we found was that high and increasing levels of thigh intermuscular fat, along with declines in total thigh muscle area, were predictors and important ones of gait speed decline in otherwise healthy older adults. The second takeaway message would be that the 4-year decline in gait speed that we saw for those individuals who gained the most fat and lost the most muscle, so that simultaneous such shifting in body compartments, saw a small but clinically meaningful decline in gait speed of about 0.05 meters per second.
0.05 meters per second. Wow, that is pretty significant, isn't it?
Well, I mean, right. So a geriatrician would certainly look at that and say that this person is slowing down a significant amount in that time period.
I can't help but I know we've done shows in the past about the loss of muscle as a result of the decline of the peripheral nervous system and the impulses that get to the muscles in keeping them. And I know this is not your bailiwick, but I'm thinking, you know, is this a chicken and egg situation? I mean, the majority of my audience engages in heavy resistance training. Mm-hmm. I would venture to say, well, I know for a fact that we have several men and women who are in their 70s who engage in powerlifting events. Mm-hmm. And it would be great to see the effects that that has on both the nervous system and the ensuing muscle mass that they maintain and actually perhaps even increase through heavy resistance training.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems that that would be a prescription for these individuals who are losing muscle mass as they age.
Certainly. I mean, this is a really active area of research right now to try to identify the best therapeutic strategy to improve body composition for the older adults. So how can we maximize, especially for, let's say, an overweight individual, how can we get them to lose fat, but preserve muscle? And so, the answer, I think, is continuing to evolve the more research we do, but certainly we know that resistance training, especially high volume resistance training, can attenuate the loss of muscle mass that you see with aging, and also when you get someone to lose weight.
There's an emerging science called inactivity physiology, the way exercise physiology studies the effects of exercise on the physiology of the body. What this new emerging science is looking at, the fact that we sit so long, we sit so often, we spend so much time not moving, and we know that this becomes even more prevalent as we age. We've talked about, do you stop moving because you age, or do you age because you stop moving?
Mm-hmm.
Has been discussed on this show quite a bit as well. What about the fact that these individuals, because they're aging, they're just spending a lot less time on their feet, and as a result of that, the body goes, I just don't need all this muscle. I'm not using it very much. We know that the body has that kind of negative feedback loop going on all the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and I think you're kind of hitting around a kind of causality here. And in our study, we can't really infer which came first, whether it was that the body compartments changed. I mean, what we're postulating is that the change in body composition predicted change in gait speed, but it certainly could have been the other way around. People weren't walking as much. Maybe they're more sedentary, and that caused a change in these body compartments. I think the way we have to really look at that would be a randomized controlled trial, which I would be shocked if one isn't in the pipeline somewhere.
Yeah, right, exactly. It says here in the press release that, the results showed that preventing age-related decline in walking speed isn't just about preserving thigh muscle. It's also about preventing thigh fat gain.
Mm-hmm.
Infiltration of muscle by fat is not necessarily a result of, let's say, the lack of use of muscle. We know that the infiltration of muscle by fat is a biological process that has a lot to do with things like insulin resistance and other metabolic disorders. It's something that has to be happening not just because of the lack of mechanical activation of the muscle. Would you agree with that statement?
Well, yeah, I think that there are certainly other biologic factors driving that. I mean, we know that you see increases in fat infiltration with age. So if you took someone, an active older adult and an active younger adult, chances are, the active older adult would be staving off some of that infiltration, but you would still see this age-related response, which may have to do with changes in metabolic functioning, like you suggested, or other things. But yes, I think that it's more than just activity. There's some, and I can't exactly speak to what it would be, but there is some biologic mechanism driving why we start to see that as we get older.
Yeah. What does your group look forward to next? Are you working on any more research that's in this area?
Yeah, so my active area of interest is really trying to optimize weight loss for the older adult, especially for the overweight and obese older adult. We know that obesity, predisposes older adults to every chronic condition, as well as disability. And so, weight loss is a way that you can fix that, but getting people to lose fat and not muscle, especially if an older adult, I think is a really important area, and not one that we know how to do really well. So trying to delineate the best strategy to get an older adult to lose fat while preserving muscle, those are the types of studies that I'm interested in conducting.
Well, I without sounding like a jerk, we know how to do it well here. I'm not kidding with you. I mean, we have, I have a saying that I've been saying now for going on 9 years that I've been doing this show. As a matter of fact, for the first 2 years I did this show, I closed every show with this statement. Muscle is metabolic currency, so get into the gym and make a deposit today. Mm-hmm. And we know that the body reacts to overload by upregulating processes that prepare muscle for greater work and at a future time. Now, obviously, as you age, your body is not in the best possible position to recover and build muscle, so you have to have other interventions, sometimes hormonal, clearly dietary. We know that aging individuals tend to eat far less protein than mm-hmm. is required to continue to stimulate the protein synthetic response, and especially quality protein, high in leucine that influences things like mTOR that seem to be part of the metabolic switch that turn muscle growth on. So mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's just about exercise. If you get an elderly person in the gym, they exercise the heck out of themselves, but they do not have the biological equipment to repair muscle. They're just going to drive themselves into the ground faster.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts with, you know, it really does start with getting, using, you don't have to go to the gym either. I mean, they can do body weight squats at home, but it does start with some sort of pattern of progressive overload to get the body to supercompensate and go, wow, I didn't know we were going to be doing this kind of stuff. I better get busy building some muscle, to protect myself. Mm-hmm. It really does. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm sure that, scientists are probably working on that as well right now as we speak. So
mm-hmm.
anyway,
mm-hmm.
but all right, well, this is really great information. And, obviously we're all aging, and there's a lot of us who aren't 70 or 79 and we're already slowing down. I was talking to a young lady just recently who's one of her complaints was that she just can't move as fast as she used to.
Mm-hmm.
And this could actually be a problem that we're seeing in young adult or younger adults than the, cohort that you studied. Because let's face it, if in fact these are metabolic changes, as well as, age-related changes, we could have lots of people out there who have, thigh muscles that are infiltrated with a lot of fat, and they could be slowing down as well. Wouldn't that be true?
Oh, well, yes, absolutely. I mean, with the rise in the obesity epidemic, I think you're going to see a kind of a downshifting of the time course of a lot of these things that, you know, younger people are going to be, you know, affected. Something that may have been traditionally something that maybe 70 or 80 year olds had to counter, you might be seeing 50 and 60 year olds dealing with that too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think younger. I think you're being conservative. I think 30 and 40 year olds are already starting to slow down, and they're wondering why. Well, this could be part of it. Listen, Dr. Beavers, I want to thank you so much for being on Superhuman Radio today.
Certainly, this is my pleasure.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, so stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to change the discussion slightly. We're going to talk about energy drinks. They're all the rage. But are there hidden risks in energy drinks as it relates to blood pressure and heart rhythm issues? We're going to talk to Dr. Sachin Shah and Dr. Ian Riddick when we come back from the break. Stay tuned.
Year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrient C. Altrient C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrient delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to altrientc.com. That's altrientc.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to AltriantC.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altrient C. 21st Century Vitamin C.
New from Rob Ragish, author of The Blueprint and SHR's own Blueprint Power Hour, comes The Blueprint Bulletin. Every month, Rob delivers the absolute latest and greatest information right to your inbox. Everything's on the table, including training, diet, supplementation, gray market products, and more. This is a fantastic way to stay one step ahead of your competition and use these secrets to up your game. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com or click the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad on superhumanradio.com to get your free introductory issue. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com today. Everyone wants growth hormone because growth hormone works. Now AgeForce is offering a buy one, get one free on their most popular transdermal patch. The power patch contains 25 milligrams of real somatropin per patch. It delivers real, competent human growth hormone right to your bloodstream without the discomfort of injections. There's never been a better time to see what the power patch can do for you. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today. This offer ends soon. Get your growth hormone the H-Force way. Power patch.
Calling all men. The Men's Stack is here from Muscle Gauge Nutrition. The Men's Stack will give you the energy you need to train harder and the materials you need to build new muscle. The Men's Stack includes American Protein Isolate, Stimulant-Free Pre-Workout Alpha Rage, Muscle Pump Activator, L-Arginine, AKG, and Multivitamin Plus Minerals specifically formulated for men. Now, Superhuman Radio listeners can get this Men's Stack for just $99 and free shipping while supplies last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad today. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rubbed Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Electronic muscle stimulation is state-of-the-art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need. Small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial-grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200, including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more.
Jumping higher, lifting more, it's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. You know, really, I'm willing to bet you can't turn around while you're outdoors or at your office or at the gym or anywhere and not see someone sipping on an energy drink. And there's lots of speculation that these energy drinks carry a greater degree of risk than many of us want to believe. My next two guests, Dr. Sachin Shah and Dr. Ian Riddick. We're going to talk about this just a little bit. Dr. Shaw is with the University of the Pacific in Stockton, California. And Dr. Ian Riddick is the Director of Preventative Cardiology at the Travis Air Force Base. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Let's start off. First of all, I have to ask this question. Dr. Riddick, you are active military with the U.S. Air Force, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Does the Air Force have a special interest, or does armed forces have a special interest in this? Are we seeing a prevalence of our enlisted personnel turning to these energy drinks today?
Well, the military does have an interest. In fact, a couple of years ago, they banned certain substances or certain products that contain certain substances that were found in many of the supplements that some of our soldiers are taking to enhance their performance or enhance their workout performance or their alertness,
right,
because of some of these concerns.
Okay. All right. And this is important. Very, very important. Okay. So let's turn to Dr. Shaw, first of all. I know my audience is thinking to themselves, look, caffeine is caffeine is caffeine. An energy drink packs maybe 300 milligrams or 200 milligrams of caffeine anhydrous. The average cup of Starbucks coffee carries 200, 250 milligrams of caffeine. Why are we focusing on energy drinks exclusively?
So that's a great question. And as you know, you are getting into the question a lot further down than what I thought. You know, this is a very important topic, but to specifically answer the caffeine issue that you bring up, because that's not the only issue on this topic. But in terms of the caffeine, you know, we don't know if caffeine is the only culprit that may have adverse effects in energy drinks.
Yeah.
There are other things in there like taurine, guarana, B vitamins, and we just don't know the adverse effects from these additional supplements, whether they work individually, whether they work together, whether they counteract each other's effects. There's a lot of questions.
Let's address that, and then we'll move into the study that you did. Let's face it. Energy drink manufacturers, like pre-workout supplement manufacturers, use specific ingredients that have a synergistic effect to enhance the stimulatory effects of caffeine. For instance, many manufacturers used to use quercetin because quercetin has the ability to block the uptake by the liver of caffeine, so it keeps caffeine in circulation for even longer. A lot of these additional ingredients in energy drinks, and obviously you can see my question was rhetorical, are designed to produce greater stimulatory effects for longer periods of time from a multitude of pathways. Now you are a doctor of cardiology, correct, Dr. Riddick?
Yes.
Okay. So when you look at the heart, I mean, okay, so the heart may be able to handle the caffeine that is in coffee, by the way, which is sipped, because it's hot generally. But when you down a monster drink, I got to believe the heart goes, oh, my God, what are you trying to do to me?
Yeah, you know, typically we think of coffee as an adult beverage, as a sipping beverage, and we tend to kind of regulate how much caffeine we take in a given day. And as you alluded to, a lot of these drinks are designed to be consumed fairly rapidly. Some of them are used, you know, maybe not in the intentions of the way that the product was meant to be used, but in party atmospheres where they're down in a shot-like fashion. And there is evidence that consuming these things in rapid succession can really spike up the levels of caffeine. And you know, in conjunction with some of the other stimulatory effects, we don't really quite know what that does. Now, the other thing is that when these drinks are consumed with alcohol, and mm-hmm. some of these products were marketed that way and then banned, the alcohol will increase the half-life of the caffeine. And we know that people who tend to drink these on a regular basis, the caffeine will stay around a lot longer. And then if you go and participate in some sort of activity or take up some other substance that then increases the stimulatory effects, those things may act synergistically, and they may have untoward effects that we are just now beginning to figure out.
Okay. So, Dr. Shaw, talk about the study itself. How many you reviewed a lot of the literature that's out there already, correct?
Correct. So this study is actually what they call a meta-analysis, and in layman's terms, that's a study of studies. So meta-analyses are actually very powerful, and you know, I know your audience is very knowledgeable, but they're considered in this day and age one of the top tiers of evidence, almost sometimes similar to a randomized controlled trial. The issue is sometimes we do a lot of small studies and we don't have enough power to form conclusion. Sometimes the small studies have opposite conclusions. So meta-analysis can combine all these small studies, put them together in a very scientific manner, and come to a magnitude of effect, a final answer, so-called, and a thorough systematic summary of all the studies.
Okay, so but also we know when you look at meta-analysis that publishers of studies can pick and choose which studies to include. Did you include the complete universe of studies that looked at the effects of these types of drinks, or did you exclude a certain number? And if so, how many did you exclude? How many did you select?
So that's a great question. Yes. So in a good meta-analysis, there are many things that you have to look at. And one of the issues that you brought up is cherry-picking the articles that you want to include and not include. Well, but the first step is actually really casting a wide net, trying to capture as many studies as possible and making sure that you're actually not cherry-picking, right? And
right.
That's at times called publication bias. You need to assess for publication bias in a meta-analysis to see if you know, there are some studies that are not picked up. So we actually did a literature search across multiple databases, and what we ended up finding was 351 citations. Okay, we screened all of them, and then we had a final number of 7 included in the analysis. And all of these studies were prospective in nature. Okay, and one of the issues in the energy drink field is there is just not that many studies.
Right. Okay. But is there not studies on caffeine anhydrous as a separate agent? Because isn't it actually caffeine anhydrous that is used as the form of caffeine in these energy drinks?
Typically, that is typically true. But what we did is we did not look at the caffeine piece of it. We looked at only studies that used a marketed product. So we were eliminating even energy bars or, you know, other forms of beverages. We were looking at pure energy drinks only.
So out of these studies that you selected, how many people would have been in the combined cohort of these studies?
Great, great. So in terms of the specific results, out of the 351 articles, like I said, there were seven total included, but three really had data for the arrhythmia or the EKG endpoint that we were looking at. There were six that had data on the blood pressure effects that we were looking at, and the seven were the ones that had data on the heart rate piece of it. And the number of people, so it ended up being a pooled number of 93 people for the EKG endpoint, 132 people for the blood pressure endpoints, both systolic and diastolic, and 144 people for the heart rate endpoint. And you are absolutely correct. This is relatively a small number, but can you imagine how small these studies actually are?
Yeah, right. So while this is a small number, it probably makes up a significant number of the small studies, so it gives it a lot of gravity.
Correct, and hence our results are statistically significant. And you know, regardless of what mine and Dr. Riddick and some of our co-authors' opinions, personal opinions may be on the industry, we are researchers, we need to be objective to the data.
Okay.
And what we are finding is a statistically significant increase in the endpoints that we looked at. And we want to put that out there.
Okay.
But we are saying that we need more studies.
Right. Absolutely. I'm sure there are going to be more studies because it just amazes me the shelf space that energy drinks take up, number one. Number two, the size of the energy drink that is sold. I mean, they're not 12 and 16 ounce cans. These are like magnum cans of drinks. And more importantly, younger and younger adults are using them. And more people are depending on them to get through their day. So here's what I want to do. I want to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I want to talk about what you found in these individuals that did come out in the study as it related to blood pressure and changes in EKG rhythm. We're talking with Dr. Sachin Shah and Dr. Ian Riddick. This is Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You call your battlefield after each training engagement, you must recover. Introducing the most complete all-natural and organic recovery formula, AM Nutrition's Basic Training, formulated by a military veteran. Basic Training provides the ammunition your body needs to recover and continue the fight. No fake sugar or flavors, no GMOs, less than 1 milligram of sugar and soy per serving, with complete nutrition no other company provides. Arm yourself with the healthiest recovery formula on the market, the body's ammunition. AM Nutrition. Join the nutritional revolution by going to muscleandnutrition.com. That's muscle, AMNUTRITION.com.
Recover!
And nutrition.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business. Way Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural
Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money. Everyone wants growth hormone because growth hormone works. Now AgeForce is offering a buy one, get one free on their most popular transdermal patch. The Power Patch contains 25 milligrams of real somatropin per patch. It delivers real, competent human growth hormone right to your bloodstream without the discomfort of injections. There's never been a better time to see what the Power Patch can do for you. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today. This offer ends soon. Get your growth hormone the AgeForce way. Power Patch. Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a one-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting-edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding.
Build muscle. That it's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Are you drinking an energy drink right now while you're listening to this show? Really? Put that down. Okay. Okay, so let's go back to Dr. Riddick for a second. From a cardiologist standpoint, what markers did you look for in these subjects to indicate that the heart was doing something that was not in its best interest?
Yeah, so, you know, the two things that we looked at in this pooled analysis was, or the two things that we found statistically significant in this pooled analysis was the systolic blood pressure and the QT interval. The other things that were looked at were the diastolic blood pressure and the heart rate, which were not statistically, we did not see a statistically significant change.
Okay, what exactly is QT interval for the audience out there that's never been to a cardiologist?
Right. So the QT interval, looking at an EKG, when you see that big spike and then the little blip that comes after it, that represents the entire QT interval. It's really the phase where the heart is contracting. That's the impulse, the electrical signal to the heart that's telling the heart to contract. The part that we're mostly concerned about is the latter portion of that, which is kind of like that little blip that comes after that big spike. And that's like where the heart is resetting itself. And that is where the heart is potentially the most vulnerable when it comes to arrhythmias. So to give you an example, for all the athletes out there, they've probably heard the scary stories of, you know, somebody getting hit in the chest by a baseball and collapsing and dying. And that's called commotio cordis. And it's just basically a high impact to the chest at exactly the precise time where that heart's resetting itself, and it changes the pressure inside the chest, it changes the electrical properties briefly, and it can lead to the onset of a fatal arrhythmia. And when you prolong that QT, then you relatively increase the likelihood that something could come along and provide an impulse at just the right moment and put somebody into an arrhythmia. And so we all get little extra heartbeats every once in a while. And normally the heart rate, you know, in a healthy athlete is going to be relatively slow. And that's the pacemaker of the heart that's kind of determining that. But occasionally you get a little extra heartbeat, and that's like kind of like the heart jumping off sides. And in people that are predisposed to such arrhythmias, if they have underlying congenital heart disease or some connective tissue disorder, or they've got some channelopathy, we call it, like prolonged, you know, long QT syndrome, then those people are particularly vulnerable to anything that's really going to lengthen the QT. So in our study, we found that it lengthened the QT significantly at about 10 milliseconds. And to put that into some kind of a reference, if you were a drug manufacturer producing a product and trying to get approval through the FDA, you have to go through a thorough QT test. And if your drug lengthens the QT less than 5 milliseconds, then you're in the clear. You're good.
Wow.
But if it's more than that, and if it's in the range of about 10 milliseconds, then you've really got some explaining to do. You have to do more analysis to show the FDA that your drug is not going to potentially increase the rate of arrhythmia significantly. And that's why we think that this is an important thing to put out there, that we found that there is a statistically significant lengthening of the QT in a range that at least governing agencies have felt to be notable. And so
what did you find about the energy drinks? Did they prolong the T portion of the QT?
Yeah, they prolonged the QT, so we didn't really narrow it down to which part, but I mean, in general, when we're talking about QT lengthening, that's really what we're talking about in any kind of drug. I mean, there are certain medications that we prescribe patients that, you know, we know there's a risk of QT prolongation, and we have to weigh that risk. But, you know, we're doctors, and we look at each individual patient, and we make a determination. But yes, this lengthened the QT, and what has been found in other caffeinated or caffeine, when it's been studied in moderate doses, really hasn't had an effect on QT. Now, most of the bigger studies have been, you know, just looking at individuals who consume, you know, coffee or tea at a modest amount. And so it's interesting that with these energy drinks, they do prolong the QT. And is it the caffeine or is it something else? And there are other, you know, ingredients in there that have been associated with lengthening of the, with some of the physiology that lengthens a QT. It's been thought that the ingredients are not to the level that you would expect it to do that, but there is some biological plausibility as to perhaps there's another ingredient other than the caffeine that's doing it.
Okay, now, Dr. Shaw, you're a doctor of pharmacology, correct?
Pharmacy practice,
pharmacy,
but yes.
Okay. All right, so a lot of these manufacturers will say the reason they put taurine in these drinks is because taurine is a conditionally essential amino acid that finds the majority of its concentration in heart tissue, and its purpose is to suppress the response of hyperactivity of heart rate and heart rhythm. So if that's the case, why did we not see a no change in the QT interval in the drinks that perhaps had taurine in them?
Well, so first off, taurine is a very taurine's pharmacology is very complex. Okay, and in terms of a dose effect and what it does, a lot more work needs to be done. But one of the key things from a pharmacology perspective that we do know about taurine is it can be a potassium channel blocker. Now, Dr. Riddick was referring to the QT prolongation earlier. Now, if you go down to the ion level, potassium channel blockade can actually lead to QT prolongation.
Yes.
Okay. So that could be a mechanism, but it is too early to say one way or another because we need more studies to really isolate whether that's the mechanism. You know, he talked about caffeine very accurately, and the no changes seen with caffeine, and those were about 400 milligrams of caffeine. What does caffeine do at higher doses? We don't know.
Right.
Because caffeine at higher doses can be toxic as well.
Right, right.
So, you know, there's a dose effect that needs to be considered as well. When we're talking about caffeine, along with some of these other molecules that you refer to.
Are there, from a pharmacokinetic standpoint, are there any other ingredients that you find in a lot of these popular energy drinks that are worrisome to you? Especially, I know that DMAA has been cited in causing problems in some pre-workout supplements. I know that the... what is that flower that they had? I can't think of that. Geranium. Geranamine was in some of them. What was it from a pharmacokinetic standpoint? When you look at the ingredient list, do you see anything else that you go, gee, you know, we just don't know enough about this one here?
Well, so first off, I believe that we don't always know what's in there in the first place, and that's an issue on its own. And as you know, you know, one of the energy drink companies is actually going to declare more the concentrations of some of the ingredients in their products, particularly caffeine. So that's an issue on its own as to what really is in there, because usually these energy drinks talk about this thing called an energy blend, and they say X many milligrams of an energy blend.
Yeah, right, right. And it's proprietary, the rest of it. They just have a list of things in an order of greater concentrations, but that could be the first ingredient could be 90% and the other 12 ingredients could be 10% of it.
Right, or it could be the other way around. The first ingredient could be 2% and the last one, which we think is least important, is 90%.
Right, right.
So that's one thing. The other thing I want to mention about, these natural herbal ingredient supplements, xenobiotics that are added to these beverages, is there's actually lack of a standard control on their manufacturing and growth. So, in fact, you can have seasonal variation in the amount of
right.
biologically active ingredient that are in these products.
We see that in Napa Valley in the production of Cabernet grapes. We see that in agriculture, in the concentration of isoflavones and things like genistein in soy during drought periods is higher concentrations because these plants, they have to upregulate and become more robust to survive. And obviously we see that in any natural ingredient that is put in anything today, including store-bought, iced tea.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that needs to be looked at more as well, because the FDA thoroughly regulates, new drug entities.
But wait a minute. You got to stop there. And I mean this with all respect to the two of you, but you cannot invoke the FDA here on the show, and I'll tell you why. Because the FDA has been doing things for a very long time, all the way back to 1938 with DES, on forward, where they claimed that they were protecting the public and controlling this, and we find out that that wasn't happening. So there's got to be a better standard than the FDA. Has to be. That's my opinion. I mean, I respectfully state that, and I'm not challenging you, but I feel like we have to do something better than the FDA. I'm sorry, we do.
Well, I think we gotta use the best available evidence that we have.
And, yes.
You know, a lot of times these things start with, case reports, anecdotal stories, and we have to take those with a grain of salt, of course. But then that's what leads to things like what we did, which was a meta-analysis of a small number of studies. And then you find something that sticks out, and it may have some biological plausibility to it, and then you further investigate that. And then eventually, these governing agencies look at that data and they weigh it, and if it's something that they feel is carries enough weight, then they make a regulatory change.
Dr. Riddick, I think what you're doing right now will have a greater impact than any forced trying to legislate safety and health into this arena. I think by coming on this show and talking about these in easy to understand, meaningful ways, where the average person who picks up a Monster or some other energy drink all of a sudden goes, I don't know if I should do that. I heard Dr. Riddick talk about how it changes your heart. I don't know if I have one of those underlying heart issues. I think I'll just get a coffee instead, because that is the organic grassroots way to change industries. Industries change because people stop buying products and they go, they're not buying our products. What do we have to do to get them to buy our products again? Well, maybe we have to back down all these stimulants in them or something. But I believe that what you're doing right now on the show and Dr. Shaw will have a greater impact than somebody coming out and saying, hey, we're going to regulate the energy drink industry. Because, that's not going to change a whole lot, in my opinion. We have to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about blood pressure. We're talking with Dr. Sachin Shaw from the University of the Pacific in Stockton, California, and Dr. Ian Riddick, Director of Preventative Cardiology at Travis Air Force Base. We're talking about energy drinks, and like so many things out there, you just can't blasé about picking up an energy drink and downing it and then going to the gym, especially if you're going to be lifting heavy and you're already going to be experiencing Valsalva. We're going to talk about blood pressure when we come back. Stay tuned. You're listening to Super Human Radio.
right, 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 right. Because in the night you'll feel fright. Right, right, right.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrient C. Altrient C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrient delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to altrientc.com. That's altrientc.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to altrientc.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altrient C. 21st century vitamin C.
Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a 1-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation. No kidding.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Electronic muscle stimulation is state-of-the-art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need. Small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial-grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200, including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Okay, I always see guys going to the gym down in a monster, either before they get there or while they're there. I always avoid caffeine. I don't even have coffee in the morning before I train. Like many of my audience, we engage in what is probably considered by the average person extremely heavy resistance training, that similar to powerlifters. And there's a phenomenon called Valsalva, and I'd like to talk to Dr. Riddick about this just for a moment. What effects did these energy drinks have on blood pressure? And if adding something to, like, the Valsalva movement in heavy lifting, does this become a concern of yours?
Well, yeah. So in our study, we showed that there was about a 3.5 millimeter increase in systolic blood pressure that was statistically significant. And in most of these studies, it was an acute effect. What we don't know from what we looked at is the chronic effects of these beverages on systolic blood pressure. If there is a chronic effect, then obviously that increases your risk of cardiovascular disease. Hypertension is the major risk factor above and beyond just about anything else. But in the acute setting and in the exercise setting, it you're specifically speaking about Valsalva and stuff like that and vagal tone and things of that sort. It was shown to blunt vagal tone and reduce heart rate recovery or impair heart rate recovery. And that's an important thing when in exercise. Now, our study didn't get into looking at whether that was deleterious or not, but in some of the studies that we compiled, those were some of the variables that they looked at. We didn't have the power to look at and see if there was statistical significance in some of these things, but those are just observations.
All right. Well, Dr. Shaw, coming from a pharmacokinetic standpoint, there are those who will argue, well, if you have an energy drink one time or maybe for a few days, you'll see this elevation in blood pressure. But then the more you drink it, the effect goes away. What do you think about that?
So that is a relatively time-tested phenomenon, and I actually agree that over time your body does have a, for healthy volunteers, your body does have a good baroreceptor reflex system, and your body tends to so-called adjust to the mild elevations in blood pressure. However, that is not always true. So what you're referring to is maybe some of the caffeine data. But you don't know if chronically, if you drink it over time, even if your blood pressure goes up by 2 to 3 millimeters of mercury, that can have long-term epidemiological consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So there was something in the news 2 weeks ago, I haven't looked at the exact report, about 12% of Europeans chronically drinking energy drinks. Now that, with a mild elevation, even if it's about 2 to 3 millimeters of mercury, can actually have long-term epidemiological consequences in terms of cardiovascular health. Right now, all the studies that we looked at blood pressures in an acute setting under 4 hours. So there is no data in terms of the long-term consumption of energy drinks. We are doing one study, and this can be looked up on clinicaltrials.gov, where we're giving people energy drinks for about 7 days. And that's, to our knowledge, the longest study that's looking at chronic consumption of energy drinks. Now, you can look at maybe some cohort data out there, you know, where we might be able to do some interesting analyses in these large cohorts, and they look at some, you know, data where how frequently do people consume energy drinks, and is that a variable in adverse outcomes? But you know, that's something that, you know, other groups should look at as well. But like we have said over and over again in this interview, this is a great eye opener for all researchers out there, and I think we need to start doing more work in this.
But is it really an eye opener? It seems very intuitive that these changes would occur physiologically when introducing drinks that heighten, if you will, the fight or flight mode of the body, and that's what they do. While people say, oh, well, they give you this ultra focus. Well, sure, you're ultra focused because all of the emergency systems in the body have been switched into red alert, but there's no real threat to kind of discharge unless you are exercising. A lot of people take these drinks just to drive to work and then sit at their desk and with nervous energy sitting there, you know, frantic. And quite frankly, I think they make you less productive because you become almost ADD-like. Anybody want to speak to that?
Well, yeah, I'll speak to that a little bit. I think you bring up some really good points. You know, it's natural for your blood pressure to go up when you're exercising. That is a normal physiologic response to exercise. This causes maybe an exaggerated increase, and maybe that's a desired outcome for those individuals that are trying to get pumped up before a workout. But I think that, as you pointed out, we need to exercise a little bit of caution, and especially in some of these people that are going out there and, you know, maybe they're not in the best of shape. You know, we're in an obesity epidemic. We're in an epidemic of prediabetes and so forth. And a lot of people, even young people, may have a little bit of endothelial dysfunction, and they're going out and consuming some of these things that they may not fully understand the risks of. And if some of these things can blunt the vagal responses in recovery and they can increase the blood pressure and cause electrocardiographic changes, then that could be
something that may cause an untoward effect in that individual. And so I think that the bottom line for what we did is to kind of put out there that, hey, more research needs to be done, but certain individuals need to be especially cautious.
Well, and Dr. Riddick, to that note, isn't it true that individuals who live in a very, very high stress, whether it's self-imposed or legitimately high stress environment, who overproduce excitatory neurotransmitters like epinephrine and norepinephrine, their heart actually undergoes changes that make the heart less responsive over time, and it can actually cause disease states because the requirements for these excitatory neurotransmitters gets to a point where they just can't keep up with what is required to make the heart beat, and they sometimes end up with a dissynchronization between the left side and the right side of the heart. We did a show about how pacemakers can correct that and how pacing the heart corrects that. But this over consumption of caffeine and energy drinks has to have a long-term effect, whether you could die from it or just makes the heart not as efficient, does it not?
Well, we don't know that from our study, but I think the things that you pointed out earlier, stress leading to an increased risk of cardiovascular events, that's been well documented in observational studies.
Doesn't the body perceive this pedal to the metal systems on high result of these stimulating catecholamines as a high stress environment?
Yeah. So yes, that's one of the hypotheses for what can lead to that is long-term exposure to high levels of catecholamines. To give you an example of a high level of exposure to acute catecholamine surge is the syndrome of Takotsubo's or apical ballooning or broken heart syndrome, and there's a lot of research and studies that have come out about that recently. It's a relatively new phenomenon, but that's the classic story is, you know, where a woman's husband dies suddenly, and then at the funeral she starts developing chest pain, and then they take her to the emergency room, and her EKG looks really ugly, like she's having a heart attack, and you take her to the cath lab, and her coronaries are relatively clean, and yet her heart is stunned, and it looks like a bowl that they use to trap octopus in, if you can imagine the picture,
right,
of the ventricle. The apex is just ballooned, and then the base of it is slamming. And there was actually a case report of an individual who had reverse Takotsubo's, a young person, 24 years old, and what that was the catecholamines in a young individual are kind of more located at the base of the heart as opposed to the apex of the heart, and then as we mature, it kind of migrates to the apex. And you know what we know about stress cardiomyopathy—that's the other term for that—is
right,
that it tends to happen more in individuals that have some underlying coronary disease. Maybe it's mild, or they've got some endothelial dysfunction. What was unusual about this particular case report that was published in Circulation was that this is a very young individual, and as far as we know, didn't really have any underlying disease, but they had found that this person had been consuming a large amount of energy drinks that contained, as you mentioned earlier, the DMAA product. And so we don't know if that's what's causally related to that. More work needs to be done. But these are, as I mentioned before, how, you know, case reports spike interest, and then we start looking into things, and we see if there's any kind of biological explanation. And we don't have enough data yet to conclude that this is the cause. But if this holds up, that it increases blood pressure chronically, or that it prolongs your QT significantly, then that's something that needs to be thought about when consuming these things, especially before, you know, an intense workout or start and stop exercises like basketball or diving into a pool or something like that, where you got a lot of different vagal type sympathetic and parasympathetic things going on there.
You know what's really interesting, and I'm sitting here thinking about this, you know, we talk, people will say, you know, I got to reduce stress in my life. And then they'll drink a monster drink to get to the office in the morning, or two cups of pot of coffee in the morning to get started. And, you know, you're basically consuming stress when you drink these drinks. And it's amazing to me because the addictive quality of these drinks is probably going to be discovered next. And we're going to talk about that real briefly. And I know this isn't your area of expertise, but we've been talking about addictive behavior on the show for a long time. Pam Colleen has come on and talked about the addictive quality of foods. We just did a show the other day where a doctor, Wang, came on and pointed out clearly that obese people have a dopamine dysfunction, just like the addict. When they want to eat, they get that same requirement, that same dopaminergic production. Well, guess what? These catecholamine-type drinks, these energy drinks, these stimulating, they stimulate the production of dopamine in the brain. And dopamine has been linked to so many addictive behaviors so far. And I have to believe that part of the reason that people love these drinks is not just because, it is absolutely not because it gives them the jitters, makes them feel like they're going to jump out of their skin, makes them feel anxiety. It's because it satisfies the production of dopamine that they've become accustomed to. Either of you want to speak on that? Well, how about Dr. Shaw, from a pharmacokinetic standpoint? Does my statement hold any water at all?
Well, actually, you know what I was about to say is you just gave me a new research idea. And that's what I will say. You know, what you're saying pharmacologically makes a lot of sense. We cannot right now go out and say that is the reason because we just don't have the data to back that up. But from a mechanism perspective, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And now you got my interest perked, so thank you. That's
well, because you know what? Because look, I can't use high caffeine anymore. I'm 54 years old, and I train pretty hard, and I become very sensitive to caffeine, which happens to a lot of older people, I from what I understand. And with that being said, you know, I tend to use very, very, very minute amounts of caffeine, one cup of coffee in the morning, and that's usually it. But what I've learned is that if you want to make a supplement that is popular, I don't care what it is, just add a little caffeine because then people can feel it. But what they feel that they love isn't the palpitating heart. It isn't the hands shaking. It isn't the feeling that I got to get up and out of this desk and run. I don't know where I have to run, but I just have to run. It's that alertness. It's that sense of anything is possible that is promoted and produced by dopamine production. And I bet if you separate, if you told people you could feel that, but not the elevated heart rate and not the high blood pressure and not all the other things, they would say, yeah, that's what I want. I don't want the other things.
Yeah, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And to that comment, I also want to add that there is actually a new type of a beverage that's coming out now. You might have heard of it, and they're called the relaxation beverages.
Yes. Yes.
And that's the new fad, you know. So we had these things that supposedly
but you see,
give you
but,
more.
But you see, Dr. Shaw, the only problem with this is that a lot of these relaxation beverages are using melatonin. Number
Correct.
One, and melatonin is a hormone that should not be altered. Its production timing is critical to the production of all of the hormones, including insulin and everything else downstream. Taking melatonin in the daytime, in my humble opinion, is a very unwise thing to do. Regardless of whether or not it has any acute effects, it will change the pulsatile nature of so many other important hormones. It will change your sleep patterns, and we don't even know what else it could change because melatonin is made at night for a specific reason. If they could come up with a B complex, maybe even a little gamma aminobutyric acid and some other things that cause the sense of relaxation, I'm with that. But as soon as I looked at some of those bottles and they have 15 milligrams of melatonin, I'm like, oh my God, you're going to take this in the afternoon and then drive to work? Really? I think they're just as dangerous on from a different end of the spectrum.
I concur, and you know, maybe in the future we'll be having the same talk about these new relaxation beverages. I think we need to start working on that. You know,
yeah. In the meantime, people just need to start meditating. You want to know? That's the best thing of all. Just meditate. Find your center. That's all.
Well, even though I'm a pharmacist by background, I do think that xenobiotics in general, whether they are you know from a drug or an herbal kind of entity. That's something we need to think before we start inducing these things into our body and consuming them. So I'm with you on that one personally.
Okay, so we'll give each of you a last word. Dr. Riddick from the Cardioprotective standpoint, what would you like people to take away from this research who are engaging in using energy drinks with regularity?
Yeah, I mean, the most important thing is that you just have to realize that these products may contain things that have combination of effects on your body that are hard to predict, or you may not be fully aware of it, and you just need to be thinking about it before you consume it. And as you mentioned, it's probably best to do things more naturally. That's really it. And moderation is key. So if you're chugging away at some of these things, you put yourself at risk potentially.
I have a nephew who's a prosecutor out in Arizona, and he gets home from work, he's exhausted, and he drinks these energy drinks at night, and then he stays up very late. And I've tried to tell him that this is a prescription for disaster, for health disaster. And I wouldn't even think of drinking coffee at night, but because these energy drinks taste like soda, people will sip them at times where they would normally not drink coffee. And I think there's a lot more to these energy drinks than just mixing them with vodka or using them in the daytime for energy. Okay, so from a pharmacokinetic standpoint, Dr. Shah, what would you hope that people take away from this research?
Right, so since you mentioned the word pharmacokinetic standpoint, I will say that one thing that I want to reinforce is right now certain patient populations that we've talked about throughout the show, caffeine-naive people with underlying cardiovascular disease, long QT syndrome, those patient populations right now specifically should be very vigilant about what they're consuming specifically in terms of energy drinks. And then personally, I am worried about the chronic consumers. Once in a blue moon, I think that your body is an amazing healer and it can handle it. And hopefully, the stars are not aligned that, you don't have an adverse event during an acute setting. But from the chronic perspective, I would like consumers to, try and avoid it or be more thoughtful about how much they're consuming. And that's a key concern of mine. And in general, I will end with, you don't always need to follow the buzz.
Yeah, right. That's a good point. That's a good term for both reasons. The buzz being the crowd and the buzz being what you get from the drink either.
Correct.
Well, with that statement, do you think that, the effects of these drinks are acute? In other words, if somebody's been using, monster drinks for a couple years, and chances are you're going to have to titrate your reduction because you become addicted to some of these things. But if they've been using them for years, once they get off of them and stay off of them, will any of the physiological changes reverse themselves, you think?
Well, death only occurs once, so hopefully that's not the outcome that you experience in an acute setting. But jokes aside, currently there is no evidence to believe that these adverse effects could be long-lasting. Yeah,
good.
So they're relatively acute.
Listen, gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been a great discussion.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Pleasure.
Okay, take care. All right, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. I've got a couple announcements to make, and then we'll wrap up the show.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money.
calling all men.
The Men's Stack is here from Muscle Gauge Nutrition. The Men's Stack will give you the energy you need to train harder and the materials you need to build new muscle. The Men's Stack includes American Protein Isolate, Stimulant-Free Pre-Workout Alpha Rage, Muscle Pump Activator, L-Arginine, AKG, and Multivitamin Plus Minerals specifically formulated for men. Now, Superhuman Radio listeners can get this Men's Stack for just $99 and free shipping while supplies last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad today.
Have you ever been let down by so-called nitric oxide muscle pump products before?
Well, prepare to be shocked.
Vengeance is like nothing you've ever tried before. Vengeance leverages several different scientifically proven technologies to deliver what some users say are painfully explosive pumps. If you are satisfied with nitric oxide products that make you wonder if they're working, move on. But if you want a muscle pump that you'll not only feel, but others will see, train with a vengeance. Go to xfmuscle.com today and get vengeance.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Everyone wants growth hormone because growth hormone works. Now AgeForce is offering a buy one, get one free on their most popular transdermal patch. The Power Patch contains 25 milligrams of real somatropin per patch. It delivers real, competent human growth hormone right to your bloodstream without the discomfort of injections. There's never been a better time to see what the Power Patch can do for you. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today. This offer ends soon. Get your growth hormone the AgeForce way. Power Patch.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Okay. We're doing a couple really good interviews tomorrow. One in particular that I'm really excited about is how wearing knee wraps affects the mechanical output and performance characteristics of the back squat. This is going to be a really cool interview. And then, of course, tomorrow's Thursday, we'll be doing the Subversity Science Roundup with the brilliant and talented Adele Musa, who asked a question. I had to close Facebook. Now, whenever I have Facebook open on the studio computer, it makes this silly bing noise. And I had to close it. And unfortunately, Adele posted a great study that shows a marginal dietary copper restrictions and how it induces cardiomyopathy in rats. And wanted me to ask my guests if the amounts of fructose in these drinks has an effect on loss of copper. And if that could be involved in the heart problems, I'm going to email my two guests and ask them for my responses and see if we can cover this when we get on the air for the Subversity Science Roundup. Okay, thank you for listening. We've got a great show planned for tomorrow, and then, of course, Friday will be Casual Friday. Hey, and help out the show by joining Life Extension Foundation for free and getting $25 worth of free supplements. Can you beat it? You don't have to spend anything. You just have to fill out a form. You get a monthly magazine. You get $25 credit that you can spend on any supplements you want. And you get membership to an organization that you can call and ask any questions you want about supplements, about diseases, or anything else. It's a great opportunity. Don't miss out. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad today. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.